House meeting to order 404. County Administrator Joe, do you have anything other? We're going to go to you, but you don't. You're not doing any. You have, yeah. Do you have anything else before you start with your part of the budget?
No, except to keep extending the offer. If anybody wants to stay afterwards and go through the primer. On how to read this sometimes very complex document, where Kevin and I are happy to stick around and do that.
The other announcement that I have, maybe all of you already know, but mental health and Bob will not be here today. Bob had a miscue with his car either today or yesterday, and he will not be able to be here. He's not hurt, but he can't make it. So we will start with administration, capital, weights and measures. Rick is here, and then probation, sheriff's office, and human rights commission. And I think the probation and sheriff's office were informed that we might be a little bit earlier today. Okay.
Human rights actually
going to
go before the sheriff.
Who? I'm sorry?
Human rights is going to go before the sheriff.
Oh, all right. Okay. That's good. Yes.
On our desks, I see a handout that says county administration. On the list of what will be looked at, it says administration/capital program, but only page 21 is mentioned. So I was under the assumption that we were only going to look at page 21. So I just want to let Joe and company know that I am not prepared for administration. That's
okay.
All.
Kevin? Well, that'll make it easier for us then.
Not in the long run.
We are going to do administration, which is very straightforward, and I'll go through that, and I'll give kind of a high level view of the capital program, and you may have questions that want to get into the details of that, which we can try to address tonight, and more likely if you want to get into the fine details perhaps later. So my budget begins on page 27 of the book. County administration. The budget takes many pages here because we have a number of units within our department, and I projected it on the screen there because I think as you look at what we do, it's kind of hard to follow each of these unit pages that you see in this document and then align it with the total. So that's what we've tried to do on the beginning slide in the packet. And you can see the variation from 2010 to the proposed 2011. You can see that the total budget is actually down. It's easy to exaggerate the decline because in 2010 we had the proceeds of the SMSI grant. That's the Intermunicipal Health Benefits Consortium grant that really inflated that cost. So I've shown you the numbers both with and without that grant. So the real decrease in spending between 2010 and 2011 proposed is about 6% or $41,000. You can see that the substantive reduction occurs in the administration units, and I'll explain where those changes are. I think you're aware of them, but I'll explain them in one of the subsequent slides. Again, the SMSI grants was in the budget in 2010. We're done, so that doesn't appear in 2011. CJATI is our contribution to the cost of Susie Cook, the paralegal, who operate CJATI on our behalf. We contribute that money to the county attorney. So that's the line item there. Court attendance, for reasons that I don't fully understand, but it's really not consequential because it's a zero local cost. The cost of the initial expenditure for court attendance shows up in the administration budget. And you can see that's flat at $62,000. Total expenditures. The next slide will show you the local. Public information is both the work that our public information officer provides to you, Marshall Lynch. Also in there is the contribution to Cornell Cooperative Extension for the media services that include, in part, the broadcasting of your events here. Risk management is a single individual who handles both our risk management and our contract work. So the sum of all those things, again, you can see was 892, will be, if you approve the budget, 649, and take the grant out of all that, and we're down by 6%, total expenditures. Go to the next slide. What's that mean in terms of local costs? Again, the cost of the administration unit is all local. So there has been a local dollar reduction there of 12%. Everything else is fairly steady until you get to risk management. That requires a little explanation. As you know, the responsibility for tourism has been shifted, most of it, from work that had been done in my office, or not at all, to planning. And as a result of that shift of responsibilities from my office to planning, I also shifted some of the room tax revenue that we've gotten for the services we've provided from administration over to planning. So there's been a $15,000 shift of revenues from administration to planning. I also shifted $5,000 of those revenues to the county attorney in recognition of what the county attorney does. So the reason that local is going up is because there's less offsetting revenue there to apply against it. But when you get to our bottom line, you can see that the local cost of administration is down by 4%. The major changes that have occurred that have affected that budget, we've talked about these recently. Yes?
Before you go on with that, so the cost hasn't changed.
Correct.
The revenue has changed, right? The support.
That's exactly right. Okay. Yep. Cost is very much a status quo cost.
Joe, I have to do this by the name of the person because I don't know where it neatly fits. I realize on the risk management and then on the expenditure one, you have risk management again and grants. Is that Jackie Kipola?
Yes.
Does she administer any other grants beside those?
She administered grants other than that. She's been very much involved in the if you want to call them grants, the strategic tourism grants.
Okay.
That are developed there. So she has handled the administrative work of that. I can't recall other grant work that she has done,
but
Frank.
Because some of the, particularly the SDPB piece, is going to be shifted to planning, the reason I'm asking is there may be a new set of grants that might need some administrative oversight and some work. Would she be the logical person to perhaps come up with more time? Will she have some time available to plug if we shift these other grants over there?
She might. Again, we're using names. Jackie has a very full plate, and especially the contracts work is pretty consuming. But if there is additional grant work, she's certainly among the people that I would look to try to pick up that burden.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Changes in the budget that have affected that bottom line. The program analyst that was a part of the 2010 budget, you may recall us talking about part of it was funded with target dollars, the balance of it with one-time dollars. Well, the part that was funded with target dollars was $31,549 in 2010. That has gone away for 2011, so that position has been unfunded. And in conjunction with that, the executive assistant position, which I refer to as a budget coordinator, has been reclassified, and the salary of that position reduced based on advice given by personnel. So that has caused the reduction in our costs. Our roster is now at 5.5 positions. That's down one full spot from the year before. I look back. I didn't go back too far. 2004, 2005, we were at 7.4 positions. So the roster of this office has declined pretty significantly over the past few years. The half position remains the half-time deputy county administrator. That's still a half-time position in this budget.
Peter?
The program analyst, is that Kevin?
It was Kevin.
It was,
yes,
Kevin, and now Kevin's the executive assistant. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay, so.
Please use the microphone, Peter.
Sorry. Okay. Thank you.
Yep. And then again, as I discussed earlier when explaining the shift in costs and risk management, we have shifted $20,000 out of our budget in revenue to where we believe it's appropriately placed, which is both planning and the county attorney's office. I think that's really it on the administration budget, if anyone has any questions.
Carol?
Yeah, I'm still trying to understand the the change that you're recommending, if there is one, in the duties of the various people that you're increasing or decreasing the time. So the administrative services coordinator position, what are the duties, and then the contracts coordinator that had been, I guess, either 0.5 or 0.6 time, what is the 0.4 or 0.5 time that will make up the difference?
Well, we've got individuals that are split between units. Again, I hate to use names, but to use names, Jackie Kippler, who had been doing tourism risk management and contracts. Again, the tourism function has been shifted over to planning. That will simply give her more time to work on contracts and risk management, so she will be able to focus her time on those two key areas.
Wait, Jackie personally will?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And you know, that she was juggling a lot in trying to do all that. So this is still very much a full-time responsibility for her in contracts and risk. The other change of responsibility really is the exchange between the program analyst, which is unfunded, and the executive assistant, where some of the work that we had hoped would be able to happen under the program analyst will probably have to diminish our expectations a bit. I really had hoped we would get into program performance measurement and be able to look at almost all of our programs at some point in time and watch how they're doing, monitor those. And I think because that position won't exist, and Kevin will be shifting over into more of a budget role, we're going to have to be more patient in terms of our expectations about performance and program measurement. The executive assistant spot will be very much focused on budget-related things. Historically, it has been, but there's been a support staff component of that. I think that will be peeling away, and you remember there was a pay reduction in this position. That support staff responsibility will be shifted to the program assistant in my budget, whose job description will allow that shift to happen.
Program assistant.
It's the administrative specialist. Right, administrative specialist.
Wait.
And that's Andrea Gibbs.
Administrative services coordinator?
That what you just said isn't in the list.
Administrative services coordinator.
Is that?
That's it, yep.
And then the contracts coordinator, the administration budget will carry the full load, but she'll report half-time to planning?
Oh, no. No. The responsibility, the tourism-related work that she has been doing, much of that will be shifted to planning as a part of that assumption
along with
of
the budget.
The tourism function, right, along with that revenue.
So there's still a one FTE listed here. So what is the...
Right, and she will still be a full-time employee. It's just that she will devote full-time to risk management and contracts management and whatever grants-related work may arise.
So we're gaining I forget whether it's 4/10 or 5/10 in contracts coordination with this program.
Yeah, and pragmatically, she will simply have time available to do the work that needs to be done on contracts and risk. Again, it's been a real juggling act and a lot of additional hours to do that plus tourism.
Okay, thank you.
Peter?
Could you very briefly tell me exactly what people do who are in risk management, what actually the function of the office is?
Sure. I'll try to be brief. I may not be that by nature, but I'll try to be brief. I guess I could divide it into two general categories, Peter. One is to make sure that we have appropriate, adequate insurance coverage where we need it. So it's to take a look at that every year, and it's to make sure that we are buying the right coverages and those kinds of things. So that's basically the insured side of things. There's also a risk avoidance element of the job that I think is as important, maybe more important than just securing insurance. It's making sure that we respond. If there's an incident report within the county about a fall or a slip or a condition that might be a danger potentially, there's a very rapid response to that by Jackie. She assumes the coordination role to make sure that that's dealt with. If somebody actually does fall down and is injured, she coordinates the response to that. So there's a great deal of that job that's involved in risk avoidance as opposed to, again, just providing insurance coverage.
Okay. And is there training for it? Is there a standard way that that you become proficient so that you could do a job in risk management?
That's a good question. Jackie's been here for a long time, 15, 20 years. So I don't know what training may have been provided when she assumed that responsibility originally. I have confidence that she does that job well now.
Thank you.
Martha, and then Mike.
It's my understanding that the county attorney's office had done some of the contracts work and maybe relieving some of the burden because of Jackie's, you know, having too many things. Mm-hmm. Do you see some of that coming back to your office and away from county attorney?
I think that will happen, yes, and that's correct. The paralegal in Jonathan's office has helped us a lot, and it's mostly on the contracts front. And again, I looked at the workload of this individual doing tourism, the other functions, and I recognize that it's too much for a single person to carry. So I believe some of that can come back.
But there is $5,000 from tourism going to the county attorney's office.
Yes. And that's really to help with particularly those contracts that relate to the room tax. They will still be helping out. The county attorney's office will. And we wanted to recognize that. And we also wanted to be honest in saying our involvement is going to diminish. So it was okay to reallocate those dollars.
Thank you.
Mike?
Well, Peter left, but his point about the risk management, quite a number of years ago, we contracted out for the risk management. And I think we brought it back into house to try to save costs.
Frank?
Thank you. Joe, you've described most of the positions and county administration. Could you describe what you do? That's a rhetorical question.
I'll tell you what I don't do. Sleep much right now. But
I'm just kidding.
Really?
Do you see county administration staying so sparsely staffed into the future?
Well, I think you can ask any department head that same question. They'd all answer the same way. I hope not. I hope we get traction at some point, and the economy does, that we can rebuild to a level that allows us to have a little more depth.
The things that you're not able to do, as you enumerated just a little bit ago, seem pretty core to me. And I wonder if you would have any dollar amount that you could give me, not now, but during the week or so, to that could be a possible legislative initiative, OTR. I don't have any sense that it will be supported, but I would like to have some idea of what we're losing actually would cost.
I will try. I'll be very candid, too. I think my office needs to share in the sacrifice that we're all dealing with right now.
That's obvious.
And I have great respect for what you're saying, and I appreciate what you're saying. But I do think we have to share in that sacrifice. And until we get through this, I think we all have to operate lean, and I'm prepared to do that. I hope as the next few years go by, we can talk about, again, getting to a better place where we can provide some of the depth that we'd all like to have.
Well, I'll ask you a different question.
Okay.
Who on our staff, whether it's in administrative or not, who actually reads the contracts that we sign?
Jackie Kipola reads those contracts in great detail. In fact, as department heads come forward, I think if you ask them all, is it a common thing where they come back to you with questions or markups or things like that? I think you find it's a very common occurrence. She reads them very carefully.
Thank you.
Frank.
Joe, the serious question. We're embarking on that lean office study. Because of the work that this budget has created and the look that various departments are taking at themselves, We set not necessarily a priority, but there were certain offices that we're targeting to look at with that lean office money, COFA, yep. And there was one at the health department. Should we rearrange some of that priority now, because some of these offices on their own are leaning up, and maybe we really need to redirect some of that money so that we might make different decisions based on it now.
Well, the point is good and timely. Yesterday, the first three groups reported out that went through this process and had kind of a group. They spoke to each other, basically. There were three groups, COFA, WIC, and health, and personnel looking at the intake, the application system. And it was really a chance for each of them to brief each other and understand, you know, is this something that worked for all of them? And I kind of crashed the party. I went. And I have to tell you that all three reported real progress in terms of untangling sometimes very complicated, maybe unnecessarily complicated processes, simplifying the work that they do, streamlining it, and also improving the level of customer service they were able to offer with the status quo staff. And they talked about the teamwork that it created and how they got to know each other better and a lot of other things that came out of there. This was really our beta test to see if what we now call smart work will work. And it sure seems that it will. And as we come through this budget process, we're going to be a smaller organization. Employees are going to be trying to do more with less. I think we have a tool that we can provide to them, to employees, unit managers, supervisors, that will help them look at their workload and think through ways that they might make it more efficient, streamlined, better. There is money in the contingency fund. There was $50,000 that we put in 2010 in the contingency fund. Right. And as you look at contingency, there's $40,000 in for next year in contingency. So we have money left this year, about half of it. And I've also recommended in contingency, we keep doing it at $40,000 next year to make that tool available to others who have been affected by this budget.
Any other questions for Joe about administration specifically? Then you're going to move on to debt service and cash capital. There.
Yeah, and this is very top line. The capital budget is on page 21, and there's a series of OTRs that begin on page 7. Again, from a top level, looking at the total capital plan for 2011, it's at $5.3 million. That's down a bit. That's down $358,000 from the year before. It's made up of two components. One is the cost of debt service, and you can see that that's up by $162,000 over the year before. The second element is a cash contribution that we make to capital, and that's down by over $500,000. It's down because we are in an austere situation right now. It's also down because in 2010, there were some unique things that were happening. We had the final cash installment for the new HR payroll system, which was $200,000. We had some match amounts for federal highway projects that were pretty significant. We had some fairly unique things that inflated the number for 2010. So that explains some of the reduction between 2010 and 2011. Again, the bottom line is $5.3 million in our capital budget. Where does the money come from? Some of it comes from one-time sources, the rest from targeting. You see the breakdown there that in 2011, 366, almost 367 in one-time money, and the remaining $4.9 million in target. And that's how we pay for the capital budget. In terms of how will we use cash in the proposed budget, and we've tried to show you the breakdown of where that cash will go. $248,000 of it is the local match for federally funded highway projects, and I think I've got a slide that'll break down the sources of that in just a second, I think. Go back. $100,000 is what we talked about when Arel was here. This is, I call it seed money. You can call it planning and design money for the proposed $2.4 million building restoration deferred maintenance program that I've suggested we should do. But the third item in the mix is a $100,000 investment in the Bostwick Fuel Facility. This is a part of our capital plan. And as I'll note in just a minute, the $100,000 will be coming out of the road machinery fund balance. There's an allocation of $38,000 for the aquifer studies. This, you've seen this one before. I tend to do it every year. And about $30,000 in TCAT capital. This is the local investment in TCAT's capital program. It's our one-third share. So the total use of cash is $516,000. And where does that come from? $149,000 of it comes in target money. The balance of it comes from one-time sources. Some of it from our general fund. $267,000 comes from the general fund balance. This is a draw on reserves. The second is a $100,000 draw on the road machinery fund balance. So again, this is a draw on reserves. So ongoing 149, then the remaining 366 in the use of one-time money. And you heard about this the other night. We've talked about it. Arel presented it in some detail. This is the building restoration project or deferred maintenance project. Again, we've put $100,000 in one-time money for planning and design, $800,000 per year is the proposed investment level until we got to $2.4 million over that three-year period. First debt service payment would come due in 2012. And when we are fully out there, when we borrow the full $2.4 million, the average debt service on that using current rates of interest will be in the neighborhood of $192,000. And that's it.
Questions, Dooley?
The last item you were talking about, the seed money for planning the deferred maintenance building capital project, the way it's described gives me the impression that no planning will be done this year, and I expected it to start this year, so that there would be time to begin implementing that project during construction season of 2011. Is that impossible, or is that what you think might happen anyway?
I think it would be okay to accelerate it. This is the $100,000. The source of it is our general fund balance. That's where it's coming from. So we're not increasing our levy to pay for that, so we don't have to wait for that levy to be increased in 2011 for that expenditure to be made. I mean, it's conceivable, Dooley, that if this legislature approved the concept and wanted to spend this money in advance, that it could approve an action that would draw the money out of the fund balance in 2010 to let work get started this year. I don't see David blanching when I say that. But I think, again, if the legislature signed on to it and they want to do it, it's conceivable we could get it started this year.
Well, because putting things off always seems to cost more, starting this three-year project sooner rather than later would make sense. And we've known about it for a long time, so it's not clear to me how much study has to be done.
Yeah, and I don't view this in terms of study. I think it's more of a very applied process of developing specs. So if we're going to be doing roofs in the next cycle, there is a certain amount of analysis that has to be done, development by engineers and architects of plans, getting the specs ready, having everything ready on the shelf to go. That was really what I had in mind with this $100,000.
So this would go to consultants probably?
Yes.
And we would put an RFP out for that?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Let's get going.
Absolutely.
All right. I had Carol, Nate, and then Peter.
Do we get a page that outlines the capital program and where we stand in it over time?
Yes, we can do that.
When do
yes.
we get that?
Yes, we've got the documents that we can circulate, yes.
Will we have a chance to then ask questions about it when we get it, or we will, if we don't ask the questions
sure.
now,
we'll not. Are you talking about 20 years and 5 years both?
It would be helpful to have them, especially for new people and for those of us who can't just put our fingers on it.
The answer is yes, sure.
Yes, thank you.
Nate?
This might be more of a David question, but do we have any metrics like age of plants or anything that tells us, you know, how old our buildings are? And also, do we spend every year, do we spend more than what we depreciate every year?
That's a very good question. It depends on how, what projects are going forward.
Okay.
So if you looked at this, if everything was approved here, it's a very minuscule investment.
Right.
So it's likely that depreciation during 2011 would be more than the investment in new facilities, because
right.
you capitalize the cost of new improvements. Right now, the projects, the health department in 2010, we had we certainly exceeded the investments exceeded depreciation, and they will continue to do a carryover, because like the health department building was
right.
accepted in 2010, so it won't show up until the end of 2010. But all things being equal, this is a minuscule investment for buildings.
Right.
There is a robust capital program with the ARRA funding for Warren Road, and then the Hanshaw Road coming up. We're spending a lot of money on highway infrastructure, so we don't have any problems there. And the airport infrastructure is pretty much every year. There's a known investment, because the federal, it's sort of like a grant entitlement you get. But it's a good point that this is a small amount that would go, I mean, the depreciation, because this courthouse here is fully depreciated, except for the last HVAC and improvements were really the only things that we've added to this building. And
now, and David, if we had another year like this where we had a relatively quote minuscule level of investment, how does that affect things like our bond rating?
It affects. They look at that. Mm-hmm. And one of the GASB 34,
yeah.
That number there, the most important element of GASB 34 is you have an entity-wide
right.
Valuation of the county. And it's affected, one of the items that affects that value mm-hmm. every year is depreciation. So
yeah.
That's about, to me, the most relevant thing about GASB 34. It gives you an easy way to look at, are you keeping up?
Yeah, and that's, so my general comment now is just that for the legislature, that I think we should be, even though we don't want to spend money, there are financial implications to not actually putting the money into the capital budget in the long run in terms of us borrowing money. So that's something to consider as we're looking at this budget.
Peter?
Could you explain what the word target means when you talk about, I'm sorry to be so unknowledgeable, but when you say the source of this is target, what exactly does that mean?
It has various meanings. It basically means that we're going to raise that money with property taxes. We're not going to bring it out of the bank. We're going to raise it in property taxes. It also establishes a baseline for future spending. So as we look next year at what target spending looks like, we will include this in our baseline level of spending for the upcoming year.
That's already covered in the recommended budget. And so that part is already covered.
But the target itself is not a fixed number. The target could go up or down, right?
Yes, it could. So if you chose to lift that target to $500,000, you could do it. If you didn't want to pull money out of the bank, you would raise taxes to pay for that. And then in the next year, that becomes kind of the baseline level of cash spending for capital projects.
Okay. What I was struggling with was the difference between one time, because you could say we're going to raise the target this year, but then next year things will be better, so we'll take it back down again. But that would not be... I mean, the assumption is that this becomes the baseline for every year.
It does, which you can always change that.
Of
but
course.
Yes, that's what it assumes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I had a follow-up to Nathan's question for David. Are there guidelines that set how quickly we need to depreciate our buildings, or do we choose?
Well, it's pretty much standardized. Buildings are generally, our capitalization buildings can be anywhere from 30 to 50 years, but reasonably 30 years for buildings, 50 years for bridges, 30 years for certain types of roads, 10 years for sort of 10 years for sort of a replacement of something. Like if you replace the heating and cooling, you would add 10 years to that depreciation. So it's not a uniform.
And that's not set by us, though.
It is set by us. It's adopted policy, but it's based upon the standards, the pretty standard depreciation models for governments. You don't want to depreciate in a period longer than you've financed. So what we had in a case, if you have a good example has been a computer. If you said a computer should be depreciated over 10 years, but in reality you dispose of it after 3 years, that's you want to match the useful life of it against the depreciation schedule.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions concerning capital budget, source of fund, or county administration? Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Now, is Weights and Measures, and Don, I refer to you as Rick. I have no knowledge why. But anyway, I am pretty old.
You better be.
Yeah, I appreciate over a long period of time, or depreciate over a long period of time. Do you want to use the mic? And let me just make one point before you begin. 284 is a line item budget starting page. His OTRs are 112 to 118, and report pages are 94 to 97. Go ahead.
Okay. I have six OTRs, actually seven. One's returning my rollover to help pay for my other six rollovers, or OTRs, sorry. They're all pretty well self-explanatory in the write-ups. Unfortunately, in my department, I don't have any room. So whatever cuts I have to endure are going to affect revenue. They're going to affect my ability to protect you guys as well as the businesses with your purchases at the stores. I've been taking cuts since 2003, according to my line items. The only year I had an increase in my line items was last year in 09 because of the fuel prices going up. I was able to get an additional fuel allotment. All the rest of the years since 2003, I've had cuts in my budget. So I'm down to bare bones.
I think we should give them $10,000 more. Carol.
Geez. This doesn't relate to this year's budget. I don't think you're going to have need of this in the upcoming year, knock on wood. Has there been any discussion among your peers or training about what you will be permitted to do and what you might be required to do to measure the amount of gas flow through meters
DEC actually has a regulation, the last I knew. I don't know if it's been restricted or not. They have a 10-gallon per minute flow restriction, and that's supposedly enforced by DEC, not Weights and Measures.
So natural gas.
Oh, natural
gas. From drilling.
As far as drilling, I haven't heard anything that pertains to Weights and Measures. A lot of times, any of the utilities are self-regulated, like the electric companies, the water companies, all that. They're pretty much self-regulated as far as their meters go.
If a landowner is supposed to get a royalty based on the flow of gas that's extracted from their property, and I don't know if we have situations where that's true now,
yep,
from more traditional drilling, who tells them if that what the amount of gas is?
That I'm not sure on. I would imagine it's the utilities. they go out and take readings every so often, and just like NYSEG would.
And so when I buy, you know, gasoline at the pump,
right,
that kind of gasoline, I trust that when that meter goes ka-ching, 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 and that goes, my cost rises rapidly, that I know that I'm getting a gallon of gasoline.
Correct.
In a similar way, somebody who's selling, you know, another kind of fuel, we don't have any public responsibility to know whether the meter of the company is
correct? As far as I know, Weights and Measures doesn't have any authority over it, I should say.
Okay, and then do you also have any responsibility with trucks to weigh that what weight they are on our roads?
I test the vehicle scales that the gravel beds and salt mines and stuff like that use. I test those, make sure they're up to par. As far as the trucks on the roads, that's city, state, county. They have DOT crews out there with portable scales. Yeah.
And that wouldn't be us?
Nope.
Thank you.
Well, the Sheriff's Department, I'm not sure if they have portable scales or not. I know the City of Ithaca does, and state troopers do.
Do you know what a portable scale costs?
Not right offhand.
Okay.
Save that question. Peter can probably tell you when he shows up.
Yeah.
Any other? Martha and Mike, and then Peter. Mark, who else?
Thank you.
We'll go around the room. Frank, Martha, Mike, Peter. Go.
Want me to go first?
Yeah. Go ahead. Don,
a couple, two items.
Okay.
First, do you have any responsibility for verifying the meters that the utility companies use, like NYSEG?
No, that's self-regulated. Unfortunately, they have to answer to the government, and essentially to the federal government. You know, if somebody can prove that they're wrong, the federal government would step in and make it right.
The other one is you have responsibility for going into grocery stores and occasionally weighing a box to make sure that the contents really, if there's 10 ounces on the outside and if it's net weight and all that business, you periodically check that.
I'm supposed to. Unfortunately, I don't have time to. Takes me pretty much all year just to get through the devices.
Well, that's where I'm going. You know, Walmart is putting on this humongous addition with a grocery store down there. Would that normally, and something like that, wouldn't that normally fall to your department to check that stuff there?
I would check the devices that are in there, and yes, I would be checking their packages, just like at Tops or Wegmans or something like that. Anything that's packaged or sold by weight or volume, I'm supposed to check, but I don't have the time to do it.
Now, I haven't gone through all your OTRs, but is there anything in here requesting? What do you need? Do you need another body? I mean, there's no way that you can make 30 hours out of 24 that I know of. I've tried that myself; it doesn't work.
Yeah. Like I say, it takes me pretty much all year long just to test devices, so I would need additional help to do the package checking, pricing accuracy. As of the cuts for this present year, I have eliminated doing all non-commercial devices like schools, law enforcement, when they have scales or tape measures they want certified. Anybody who doesn't pay a fee, I had to drop them because there's no revenue involved
in
it.
Doesn't the state assume some responsibility for some testing in the grocery stores?
Nope. Well, I take that back. They have a regional state representatives that do come in and do some testing. I have a regional state representative here in this county or for this county. I would say probably 8-10 times a year he'll stop in at a grocery store and check packages. We did it together one day here. We went up to a store up on East Hill and checked packages. And that's the only package checking I've been able to do this year.
Thank you.
Martha, then Mike, then Peter.
This is really a Joe question. It looks like you haven't funded any of his OTRs.
That's correct. That's correct. And I've suggested in there that we meet that budget target by a reduction of hours.
So that would make his, I mean, the book just says one FTE. Well, would he still be within the full-time equivalent?
But yes, fewer it would be around 37, I think it would be a little bit more than, a little bit less than 37 and a half hours a week.
To be, it would be similar to what was presented last year for this present year.
Okay, but you're now 40.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mike.
Don, we talked a little bit earlier this year, I think it was in facilities, about trying to get you some assistance, mm-hmm. helping answer phone and maybe help you with some of your paperwork. Mm-hmm. Has anything happened since then? Have you received some additional help?
I went back to the office and I sat down and figured out how much of my time is, roughly how much of my time is spent answering the phones and stuff like that, and it wasn't a whole lot of time. Most of my administrative work is doing work that I need to do. It's something I can't have a secretary or somebody else do that work. It's researching laws, returning phone calls to consumers or business owners, calling my state representative. I had a situation a couple, 3 weeks ago about firewood. Or actually, it was the pricing of gas in Jacksonville. It was an attorney from a different county called me, told me I wasn't doing my job, blah, blah, blah. I called the state, got confirmation that I was doing my job right, forwarded that email to this person. He said he was going to go over my head to Albany because I was not doing my job right.
But those lawyers.
But anything like that is stuff that I have to do. I can't rely on or pass it on down to office help, administrative help. Let me say it might be half an hour to 45 minutes a day that I go through phone messages, return phone calls. Returning the phone calls is my part of it. Paperwork, it's not that bad, other than paying bills. I have to do that once every 2 weeks I do. Paying bills and time card. I usually take half a day to do all that. So it'd be roughly 3 to 4 hours every 2 weeks. So it's not a whole lot that I could hand down to administration or administrative person.
Can I just point out that we do very little consumer protection in Tompkins County. We have Don, and we have the health department that examines our restaurants, for example, and that's pretty much it.
Thanks for pointing that out, Mike. Peter, and then back to Martha.
Yeah, the attorney's going to complain to Albany. That's the bad part, but the good part is I'll give you 1,000 to 1. Ain't nothing going to happen with that complaint.
No, because my response to him came from Albany.
Anyway, you said you've had continuous cuts for the past 8 years, I believe, 2002 to this year. Suppose I asked you, I mean, I didn't know that, so I've just heard about that for the first time. Suppose I asked you, in what ways, I mean, I can't imagine that we're, well, maybe we are, but my guess is that you working for us is not providing the same level of service to this residence as we did 8 years ago. And I wonder if you could tell me what are some of the chief ways that we are, our service is, has, the quality of our service has fallen in those periods of time. What does that mean to the consumers is what I'm getting at.
Off the top, the laundromats, car washes, stuff like that, I don't have time to get to. So all of those are untested. I haven't ever had any complaints in the 14 years I've been doing this about any of them, so they must be still working pretty close to what they're supposed to be for time-wise.
What do you mean? The car washes, what did you test there?
The timers in them.
Oh, the timers in the cell phones. Okay,
yep.
Thank you.
Yeah, I test the timers in the cell. Parking meters is another one that's supposed to be tested. I don't have time to do those. The primary one, since we've got, the department went from two people down to one person, is a package checking. There used to be two of us. One of us did all the office work and did package checking, and then I was out on the road doing all the device testing.
Okay, so the package check, I mean, you never tested that... A box of Fruit Loops that says 16 ounces on it.
Yeah.
You did that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So we'll go in and do a sample. We'll take a tear. We'll figure out what the package weighs. And I believe three packages. We'll empty all the contents out of a box of cereal, weigh the package, weigh the cellophane inside, and then that'll be our tear. And we'll go through and set 15 or 20 boxes on a scale and make sure that they're weighing right.
Okay, but if I understand that same box of Fruit Loops is being sold in every county, in every grocery store in the United States. So there must be a million people, not a million, but there must be lots and lots of people who, in fact, are checking that. There's no conceivable way that Tompkins County would be getting unfilled Fruit Loops box compared to any other county.
Well, there is a way. I mean, I've heard reports of these businesses. They know that they're... Their production machine got out of calibration. All of a sudden, they've got 700 boxes of cereal that were 2 ounces light. They're all packaged. They're all ready to go. What are they going to do with them? They're going to ship them someplace where they can get rid of them real quick. So, it doesn't happen very often, but there is the possibility of it.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. Amazing what you learn at county legislature meetings. Martha?
So it sounds like we shouldn't tell anybody that your job, that your time is going down, because otherwise we'll get all the light Fruit Loop boxes. To follow up Carol's question, it's more of a comment. It seems like this question of tracking, calibrating the production of gas, if natural gas comes here. We didn't remember to ask Jay Franklin about that in assessment. So we've had conversation about whether this would be under weights and measures or whether it would be under assessment, because that'd be the mechanism for levying property taxes on the produced gas. So I guess I would just ask that you sort of keep your ears open and see if any training comes along, see if policy shows up that says it's going to be in one department or the other. It would be something. And then if it does show up as something that's in your within your work, then certainly let us know.
Yep.
Seems like we'd have to make sure that you're covered and trained and all that.
Yeah. A lot of these utility meters are built and certified by an ISO company, they have to go through very strict tolerances to get their ISO classification. So they do all the building of them and testing them before these meters go out to the public or to the businesses. So I believe, my limited knowledge of it, that's how they keep track of that these meters are working properly. But I don't know of anybody who goes around and checks them until there's a complaint.
Well, this is maybe different from sort of a gas meter on your house or electric meter. And I guess I would want to make sure that you're watching these meters as opposed to the Fruit Loop boxes when it comes down to that. But
right.
But so, in other words, we really want to be sure we're
keep on top of it. Yes.
Thank you.
Yep.
Dooley and then Frank.
I thank you, Mike, for saying what you said about the history of the department and for mentioning what we talked about at facilities. But we also talked about whether we thought rollover should be taken from the department for general use when the department was asking it specifically for use for the coming year. And in the budget, I see that it's gone. It's been taken. And almost all of Don's over-target requests could be covered by rollover. And I think that would make an awful lot more sense than to just push it away into the general usage. I understand that the county administrator made his decisions about what core services are, what health and safety things are. I disagree strongly in this particular area, so I would like to ask my colleagues to look at it that way.
Do you have a question?
Will you do that for me?
Don, use the microphone,
please. Very easy to ask.
I was just going to say that my rollover wasn't taken. I'm offering it up to help cover the expenses for next year.
To help cover your expenses?
Right.
Yes, but that's not how it's being used. That's what concerns me.
Frank, Carol, Mike.
Don, back to, I'm glad Peter picked up on what I was saying about the grocery stores. First, have you ever found in your checking at the grocery stores anybody that's complained because the packages are too heavy?
No.
They're getting more than what they...
No.
That's rhetorical. Are you doing... I thought I heard you say something about firewood. Where, with more and more people burning wood and burning in order to use alternative fuels, they're burning wood pellets and pelletizing and corn pellets and whatnot. Are you responsible for checking scales and whatnot to verify that a cord of wood is truly a running cord, a full cord, a half cord, you know, the whole breakdown, and pellets?
Pellets are sold by weight. So, yeah, if I could get my hands on a scale big enough to weigh a 50 or 100-pound bag of pellets, I could. Wood, yes, I'm responsible for measuring. Most of the time I might get one or two complaints a year about short volume on firewood. I've already had two this year so far, and they were both from the same firewood supplier.
No names, please.
No. But it is my responsibility to go out and measure the stacked firewood. The problem with firewood is, and it's been fought time and time again, when the firewood supplier drops a load of firewood, by the time the homeowner gets it stacked and measured, it's a day, 2 days, a week down the road. If he's short weight, he really has no recourse. Because the person who supplied the firewood could say, well, he hid some of it, he's already burned some of it, they sold it to somebody else. It's a he said, she said, and all I can do is go out with my tape measure and say, yep, it's short so many face cord, or so much per face cord. There's no other real recourse unless they know the person is shorting them. They have me meet them when they get their delivery. I stand there, watch them stack it, and then measure it. That's pretty much the only way I can enforce it. Unfortunately.
Well, we're getting, I got a follow-up, Jim. We're getting requests, and I had one through Cooperative Extension and through the Ag and Farmland Board, to waive sales tax or propose some legislation around this in this room to waive the sales tax on those items as alternative fuel. And I've been dragging my feet a little bit on doing it. Only because, I'm not saying it's not worthwhile, but because that is one piece of the income puzzle that comes into the county. But it sounds like you're not getting it directly or indirectly. You're not enjoying any of the income that is being derived from that.
David could probably answer the question better than I could as to how much income's coming in from firewood.
Well,
I don't think there's a lot of people that are paying the taxes on it.
Well, not if they're meeting the truck and paying in cash or not.
Right.
Thanks.
Carol.
Have you ever explored other ways of getting assistance, such as summer youth math class project? I mean, what a great hands-on math teaching opportunity to show how I don't think this is how we ought to be doing our this core service, but I just wondered if you'd explored anything like that. And I have a question for Joe as well.
I haven't explored any of that because of the complexity, I guess you could say, of testing.
And or of keeping just a corner of what you do as surprise visits to measure the kinds of things that you don't, rather than announcing that you don't have time to ever measure some of these things, to right. have some at least small percentage of time so that our stores and other merchants know that it could happen and actually does happen occasionally. So I would urge you to consider that.
Okay.
And then for Joe, do I understand correctly that if we use rollover to fund this year, then it does not stay in the target for next year? It drops out as part of the target?
I don't think that's the way it was characterized. I think it, let me look here. I think the way it was characterized, it would be built into the target for next year, but for 2011, that increase would be paid by rollover money, one-time money. Let me double check.
Right, so if it's, right, you're recommending, it looks to me like you're recommending rollover to set off most of the OTRs.
Actually, no, that was the request. So Don said, I'd like to, I can pay for these restorations by the use of my rollover. And we have not recommended that.
Okay, so one way or another, even if we restore this as a rollover, it's still lost to target for the following year?
No, if you were to grant his request, his target would be lifted. I'm looking at the one, it's priority number one. So his target would be lifted by $1,700. So that would establish his baseline for 2012. You would also, if you granted his request, use $1,700 of his rollover to pay for it in 2011. So that leaves 2012 out there without any revenue behind it. And
right. Well, that's what I'm asking. So I just don't see how, I mean, weights and measures,
Carol,
I don't see
how
you can get, well, yeah. What you're thinking is about whether this, you can get any more core than this. I mean, very first activities of governments going back to ancient Chinese times and biblical times was making sure that a pound was a pound or a whatever was a you know,
right.
how tall your arm was.
Right. I was there shortly
after.
How
do you get any more
began.
Core services than this in terms of your thinking about preserving it?
Right. To be able, well, you can see what I proposed. I proposed a reduction in hours. So Don would have less time available to do this and would have to diminish some of the work that he's currently doing or take longer between inspections. So it could be that, I'm making it up, it could be that he looks at a certain thing once every year. Well, if he diminishes hours, it may be every 18 months as opposed to 12 months. So we may have to make those kinds of adjustments. I appreciate the value of the service. It's just that we would have to adjust.
Mike.
Well, Carol hit on what I was asking for my first question. The second one is, are we doing anything looking at unit pricing in the stores anymore, where it's supposed to say the amount per unit on the sticker underneath the items on the shelves?
The law is still in effect.
Yeah, do we do any of that?
No.
Is that all gone to buy now?
When I'm in the store walking around doing the scales and stuff, I look at briefly, looking at them as I'm walking down the aisles. If something catches my eye, then I will take action on it. But I don't specifically go to stores to look.
Okay. Because as a shopper, I seem to notice more and more that they're not there, the stickers.
Yeah. And the cooler pricing is getting to be a big problem. You have a whole cooler full of liquids, milks and sodas
Nothing.
And stuff,
yeah, you're right.
And there's no prices on them.
I think we're done here. Thank you very much, Don, for coming. And, you know, if I just venture a guess, I think we have to take a look at this department and maybe add something to it. But that's just me. At any rate, thanks, Don.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah. All right. Probation. and community justice.
Okay.
You have no microphone there. So, do you want to sit at the table one day?
Sure.
Yeah, and then you can just slide that one over and introduce your colleague, and we're ready to go.
Hello, I'm here to present the Probation and Community Justice 2011 budget. I brought with me Ukal Mukherjee. He is my budget person, and he's prepared to answer any detailed questions you may have about budget lines tonight, but he's my support here tonight. I would like to request that, because I have a lot of information to get across, and because my OTR is such a significant one, that I be allowed to just go through my presentation and that you hold questions until I'm finished with the presentation, because I have a feeling that a lot of the information that I'm going to be providing to you will be answering those questions as they come up. So if we could do that, I would appreciate it.
My sentiments, exactly.
Okay, great.
Good.
Okay, so this first slide represents the total expenditures or local dollars of the probation department budget. And you can see that the change in target from 2010 to 2011 is the difference between the fringe increase that we received, which was around $199,000, and then the 6.9% across the board reduction that we were forced to take, which was equivalent to $171,000. And the difference there is the $28,358. So this slide does not reflect our reduction in state aid that we received that we also have to make up, which is equivalent to $56,000. So the total cut to my budget is $227,000. Pretty significant cut. The other significance to the slide is the FTEs in the bottom row. And you can see there's a trend there in the declining numbers of staff. And actually, if you look at your first page of your budget in your books, you'll see that the trend is there from 2009. We were at 40 and a half staff, then 37.1. And then for 2011, we'll be at 34 if my OTR request is not approved. I think you also have notes, hopefully, on the PowerPoint presentation, which also gives a little bit of explanation. I hope that those printed off. Kevin assured me that they would. So my over-target request is $208,000. Joe has recommended $142,000. And we move right into my first OTR, and that is requesting the legislature's approval to use rollover to cover the cost and reduction to probation services state aid. So, you know, the state aid has steadily been declining. When I first started in probation 22 years ago, the state reimbursement was at 46.5%. And every year it's been cut further and further, and we're currently at around 15%. And it doesn't look like the trend it looks like the trend is going to continue. There's no reversal in that trend. As a matter of fact, there's pretty much general agreement across all of the directors across the state that eventually the state is going to zero us out. So probation will be funded totally by local dollars. So our total state aid loss, again, $56,409. We're asking that we be allowed to use $33,000 of rollover to cover some of that state aid loss, and the rest we're absorbing. And the second OTR summary is the big one. It's the day reporting program in entirety, $208,194. I'm sure that you all can appreciate that this was not an easy decision to put this program out to be cut. especially when the program was just reviewed favorably in the recent ATI evaluation report completed by Dina Bodner. You know, Joe has been talking with department heads about the fact that we've whittled and whittled and whittled, and it's probably time where whole programs are going to have to be offered up, and that's the case at the probation department. The required cut is huge. Our department is already lean. I'm already down a probation supervisor or a probation officer. We recently this year had a clerical person retire. That position's not being filled. So the clerical unit is a little bit at a loss and short-staffed. And so my logic in thinking about the day reporting program was either cut multiple programs and staff because the cut is so huge, or just lay out one entire program. If I were to cut staff, it would be equivalent to cutting three full-time probation officers. And probation work, we are mandated by the state to perform core mandated services. And staff, with being short already, staff is already, I believe, at the limit of what they can do effectively. Caseloads are currently between 60 and 70 for the criminal court unit and around 50 for the family court unit. We're already beyond the APA standards, American Probation and Parole Association. They've set caseload standards. We're already beyond those standards. To cut three full-time probation officers, those cases that they cover would have to be redistributed. It would mean increasing the caseload size of the existing staff by about 20 to 25 cases. That is unmanageable. In addition to the supervision and intake and investigation services that we do, I have already, because we're short-staffed, the family court unit assisting with criminal court work. Everyone is doing pre-sentence investigations. Drug courts and ISP officers are holding onto cases and continuing to supervise cases rather than transferring them to the core units to help manage the caseload sizes. The fact that there's a lot of pull on a probation officer's time, supervision is way, probation work is way different than when I was a probation officer back when I started. We now have unfunded mandates that we are required to provide for the state. We have to collect DNA. There are sex offender housing guidelines and investigations we have to do when a sex offender wants to change an address to make sure they're moving into an appropriate address. We have IDV and sex offense compliance reports that we're providing. We're investigating now domestic incident reports that police officers file on our probationers, and we're required by the state to do investigations into those and to make sure that maybe violations need to be filed on that person or the victim, making sure the victim is safe and helping the victim plan make up a safety plan for herself. And, of course, reviewing all of the technology that we have available. Probation officers have to spend time on their computers looking at websites to make sure people are in compliance with their GPS EM, to make sure they're in compliance with the sex offender monitoring, making sure they're not on websites they shouldn't be on. We have the SCRAM units that require website review. Of course, the interlock, and now with Leander's Law, my staff has mandated to make sure that anyone who's put on probation and for DWI has to have the interlock installed within 10 business days. So we're busy, and those are all unfunded mandates. So my commitment to the department, to you, to the community, is high-quality supervision. And I feel that we need to be... Sorry.
You're okay. Like a hibernation.
Can you just... Do we need a techno break? My commitment is to, again, effective case management. And if caseloads are too high, probation officers are not able to do the evidence-based practice they need to be doing with their caseloads. That's taking time with people, doing motivational interviewing, getting people to talk about change, having the time to respond to emergencies, filing violations and asking for warrants on the spot. I mean, my feeling is that the staff is already at their limit to provide effective case management, and by cutting three additional staff, they would be over the limit, and quality would be affected. Are we rebooting? Is that the time? Okay. So my request to the legislature is to restore the day reporting program in entirety. And I wanted to give just a little bit of background about why I'm asking for that request. I know, Peter, you said that you're a numbers person at a recent meeting and that that helps you. So just, for instance, for 2009, we had 202 participants referred to the day reporting program by almost every court in the county. We also had 8 parolees come into the program as part of a jail reentry service. If this option were not available to the courts, because we no longer have a day reporting program, those people, and it's fair, I think it's safe to assume that a lot of those people would end up in jail. If the courts say there is no structured day program, then I'm going to have to incarcerate. And as you know, Peter is already boarding out, continues to board out, even though there is a variance in place. I think it's also safe to say the board out costs would increase if these people are going to be ending up in jail. Jail should be reserved for the highest risk population that are jeopardizing public safety. Not everyone belongs in jail. Day reporting is a viable option for those lower risk offenders to remain in the community and to have a structured oversight by the program. In the ATI evaluation report, which covers the time span January 1, 2006 through September 30th, 2009, it showed we had a 58% successful completion rate. And when you compare the estimated jail days saved versus the cost of operating the day reporting program, it turns out that it only costs the county about $12,500 a year to run this program. You're either going to be paying the jail for board out costs, or we should be paying for the operation of the day reporting program. To me, the social gains of someone being in the day reporting program totally outweigh than what's going to be accomplished in the jail, which is nothing. At least they're going to be exposed to the services. The study also showed that 53% of those people using employment services while in day reporting obtained a job, 48% using the GED services obtained a GED. And both of these factors are known to reduce recidivism. So these are the two things that we really do well at day reporting, and I think that, you know, not only is it positive for the participant, it's positive for the community. Child support's being paid, DSS roles are going down, the family overall benefits, people are paying taxes. I mean, these are all the positive benefits. The other thing that the day reporting program does really well is that we do well with the younger population. They are likely to successfully complete, just as the older population is, something that's not so well done in the drug courts. And to me, that tells me we're doing something right with the young population there, whether it's the structure of the program, being held accountable, the one-on-one interaction with the staff. We're doing something positive with a very, very difficult population. So I see the slides have come up. And I wanted to show you on the slide the day reporting program as it's currently in operation. That's the first column of figures. And you can see how that adds up to $208,000. Couple of things about that column. Under the transition workforce specialist, she's listed at half-time. She's actually full-time, but half of her salary is actually located in my base budget. And for the professional services line, the GED services portion of that professional services is also it's a 20-hour-a-week contract that we pay, 10 of which is in this line, and 10 hours of which are in my base budget. So it's those have been split. So I hope that's clear. If we're not funded for full restoration, I fear that if there's no program, all of those things disappear, and we'll no longer be able to refer anyone for GED services. I mean, currently the Maine Probation Department utilizes the day reporting program for people who are on core probation who need GED work, people who are unemployed, and we refer over there. That will be lost. There will be no jail reentry services because my employment workforce transition specialist goes up to the jail. That will cease. And if the program's lost and there's not the availability of security in that building, all of the existing staff, at least my staff in that building, will have to relocate back to the Human Services building, and that's going to be a tight squeeze to fit them back into the office. In addition, that would affect the Family Treatment Court. I see Patricia Carey is here, and that program, which is housed in that building, I don't believe would no longer be able to operate there without having security present in that building. So that would mean relocation of that program as well. I understand that resources are limited. I know you've heard all the department heads come and ask for money, and I appreciate that. I'm here really to really request that the program remain in full effect. Joe and I had talked about the possibility of what would a halftime program look like, and is that something that could be an option? And I fully believe that the full program is the better way to go because of the daily structure that's provided there. I think it's probably going to be a better option for the courts to know that they're referring someone to a full-day program. It might not be as attractive to the courts for someone to be there half a day. It might not be enough for them. But, you know, I did sit down and take a look at what the possibilities of a halftime program would look like, and that's that second column of figures there. I would still need to retain the supervisor in the building who provides oversight of the program. I would still need to have to provide a security officer position, although that currently at 1.5 would be reduced to one full-time person. The reason why we need security in that building, again, is that the security is not just there for day reporting, but it's also there for the drug court officers who are located in that building and for family treatment court. The drug court officers see their clients 2 to 3 times a week. There's drug testing going on there. There's clients in and out. Family treatment court has their participants reporting to that program with children in tow many, many times. Security needs to be present in the building. Again, with a halftime day reporting program, because I have the transition workforce specialist and the GED services, 20 hours for the work, for the employment, 10 hours for the GED, located in my base budget, we would still be able to offer those services with a half-day program. And those are, you know, and what would a half-day program look like? I think it would be a 9 to 12 with emphasis and the focus being on the GED and the employment, the two things that the evaluation report said we do really, really well. It's not the greatest plan. My heart's with the full-day program, but that's, you know, when Joe and I had talked about a half-day, this is what we could come up with. Okay, so does anyone have any questions about, which I'm sure you do, about what I've just talked about?
Frank? Carol?
Pat, I know how tough this is. And none of it's easy, even for us. But I've got, naturally, a couple of questions about particularly the OTR. What I heard you say was because if we did away with the program or go with the halftime, there's a possibility that the individuals in that program, and that's the day reporting one you were just mentioning, those folks might be spending more time in the jail. Is it safe to say that because they're not there, it's saving the sheriff money on or the jail money on them not having to be boarded in the jail or boarded out off the county facility?
Well, I think that only makes sense, Frank.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, if there's boarding outgoing now, even with the variance, and then you take away this program and these people, the courts now don't have this option, and the courts decide incarceration instead of the structured program, then if they end up going to the jail, I can only imagine that, yes, it will increase board-out costs. It will increase transportation to other counties, all those things that goes with the board-outs.
When you were describing this, you were mentioning some percentages of people that went through the GED program and whatnot. Where's the best place for us to look to find out the actual numbers as opposed to the percentages?
In the ATI evaluation report
that
Dina Bodner just completed, all the figures are in there, yes.
Okay. And the last question I have is, because the individuals that are referred to this program come from municipal courts, the city court, are any of those contributing any income to this program at all?
No.
This is totally a county-funded initiative.
Correct.
Thank you.
Carol.
Yeah, I believe that this program saves us money related to the jail. But I am trying to understand what we attribute the rise in costs, even for the base budget, over the last few years. So to stay even this year, to just maintain effort, essentially, it's going to cost us about $200,000 and change. More. Well, I'm at the very final totals, page 213, where you have the total county cost of the whole program. And if you know, we spent $2.3 million on it last year, and it's going to cost us, assuming we grant the OTRs, $2.5 million. So I'm just trying to. So it's a $200,000 difference there. So I just am trying to, in general, understand what it is that went up. And then the year before that, there was an even bigger rise. You know, it was almost $1 million more.
What page are you on, Carol?
So I'm just trying to understand.
What page are you on?
213, okay. The very final total county cost line.
All right. So Carol, Pujol can probably answer that question better than I can on that.
I can try. I don't.
You want to use the microphone?
The reporting costs are going up every year, but this time we have put the program as an over target because we could not accommodate in the base budget. And the reason for that is primarily the across the board cut and the state aid loss and some other minor changes, you know, like increased use of electronic monitoring lead to higher costs. But essentially, we had this choice to make up the deficit to cut individual positions from different areas. And that's what was ultimately decided, that to keep the major programs, core probation, if you can, mandated services intact. Probably, since the cut is, instead of cutting individual areas, decision or recommendation from our side was taken for the day reporting, which we could not keep in the base budget.
No, I understand that. I'm asking, was it just that everything went up a little bit, that it, to which we need to attribute the $200,000 rise in total costs?
I think we can explain most of it with a couple of variables. The growth between 09 and 10 is mostly explainable because of the way we treated benefits differently in 2010 than in 2009. So if you look at the 2009 budget, it shows fringes at zero. We accounted for them centrally. In 2010, we began to put them in line items. So
a
large growth between 9 and 10 is that, mostly.
A $900,000 difference?
Significant amount of, sure, I don't know if it's 900,000, but a lot of the change between 09 and 10 can be explained because of that. Pensions, health, workers' comp and all that. 10-11, that shift can be simplified in two things. The first is the rise in fringe benefits, so pension costs especially went up, and state aid for probation went down. So those two variables explain a lot of that change between 2010 and 2011. Aid declines and pension increases.
Okay. Now that part, I get more than, maybe I have to look at last year's budget, but I didn't remember it being that big a difference, a rise that we had to make last year to keep this program viable. Kevin's got his hand up.
I was just going to say, fringes accounted for from 2009 to 2010, roughly $500,000 in the probation department.
Thank
so that's
you.
Where the big rise, big reason why that jumped up to begin with. And then the change from 2010 to this year is that additional fringe increase, as well as the other mandates that they're responsible for taking over.
I mean, this year alone, it was $200,000 for the fringe rates went up for the department.
I have Peter, Martha, Mike, Dooley.
Okay, you don't have to remind me I have to ask a question. It'll end up with a question, but it'll start with a statement. There's a serious analytic flaw in this whole business of doing the cutting, which plays out in the day reporting thing. Namely, everybody was asked to make a cut in their program of a 7%, and so those cuts were taken across the board. But the problem is that if we're to believe what we hear, and I have no reason to doubt it, that this cut of the day recording program doesn't saves us maybe 5 or 10% of the amount that it's cutting, because it comes right back in the sheriff's budget, because if those people go to jail, come hell or high water, we're going to have to board them out, and if we're all full, and that is going to come back, and so we'll pay for that. So we have... there's something in the accounting. That should have gone into the accounting, realizing that we don't get 100%. As a matter of fact, we don't even get, I bet you, 95% of the saving from making this cut that we that everybody else is doing. So, right?
Interesting point. Your question?
The question, Peter? Yeah, the question is right, okay?
Yeah, it is right.
I promised, okay. All right, that's my first question.
Now, and I think it's important for the legislature to understand the cross-departmental implications that are going on. And there are other cuts to other departments, which, you know, I'd like to follow up with when this is all said and done, that will probably have an impact on probation that maybe you don't realize. So this is one of those examples where a huge cut here is probably going to negatively influence another department, in this case, incarceration costs.
Okay, now for my second question.
First one was great.
Which will have the same format. I don't know how many of you read the front page of the Ithaca Journal this morning, but it turns out that Tompkins County is the 26th county in the country. We're always proud we're up at the top of the list. And 26th in the tax rate the property tax that we charge of all the counties in the United States, not all the counties of New York, but all the counties in the United States. And that means that we're at the 99th percentile. Now, there's a lot of explanations, but what came into my mind when you were giving that presentation is you're telling me roughly that if you have to absorb these cuts, you simply cannot do the job that you're supposed to be doing, that you're now at a level where if you cut any more, you can't do it, and probation is a mandated function, and it's a function every place throughout these United States. Now, if I try to put together those two statements, either we're doing something wrong, or else 99% of the counties are not providing the level of probation that is required to do the job properly. So I wonder, I mean, you must understand, you make comparisons with other probation departments. So Is it that dire? What's going on is that nobody is doing the job of probation very level it should be done?
I know from my personal experience as being a probation officer for many years and now as being director what constitutes quality work. I'm not interested in having a department where probation officers are supervising 120, 150, 200 people. What kind of supervision can you provide when you're seeing that many people? They're in, they're out, they're in, they're out. There's no way that you could sit and talk with someone and make referrals, get an assessment of what's going on. It would be crisis-oriented work. It would be violation because they're out there because of a new arrest rather than trying to maybe prevent a new arrest or referring to service. My commitment, and I hope that the legislature supports me on that, is that we do quality work, we have decent-sized caseloads, and the probation officers have time to do the evidence-based practice that the state is telling us is effective in reducing recidivism. If we don't do the evidence-based practice, then the recidivism is going to go up, the jail is going to be busy.
I have a third question. It's a real question. I mean, to me, the argument you make is very compelling about the fact if you eliminated the day reporting program, the results would be the ones that you say. But the question I have is that, I mean, that's easy. If you eliminate the day reporting, then there's no place they can go, so they have to go to jail. But if you reduce it to half time, does that mean that you eliminate it for half the people? Or does it mean, or what does it mean in those terms? You know, there's always the diminishing return argument that the last half or the last 10% that you do the most important 10% first, and then at the end you're doing the things that get you not so much more. With eliminating the least important half, how important would be the impact of that? I wish I could phrase that question better.
It doesn't necessarily mean there would be less participants coming to the program. It just means the structure of the program is going to be totally different. And I forgot to put the slide up, but this is basically what you're going to be losing if it's a half-day program. These are the contractual services that are provided. This is what makes up the current program. These are the classroom educational classes that are happening every day there. And these are the contractual services that would have to go. These are important educational classes that give benefit to the population. So it's not just necessarily that there would be less participants, it's just that the structure of the program is going to be drastically different.
Okay, I think that speaks for itself. Okay, thank you.
Joe had his hand up, and then Martha. Go ahead, Joe.
And only to comment on that article in this morning's paper about taxes. So our viewing public knows that is the sum total of county plus municipal plus school taxes. So it's not the county's tax rate, it's that total combined burden.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I should have said that. Yeah.
And there's some misinformation. Martha, you were next on my list, Mike, and then Dooley.
And I didn't see the paper yet, but Joe crunched the numbers a couple weeks ago, and fully 88% of our property tax levy goes directly to pay what we call the Class A mandates, the mandates where we have no choice about the spending, early intervention, Medicaid, assigned counsel, things like that. So that and that's the structure of New York State, and it's not the same as the structure of other states. I think to be clear that, so in other words, what you said about how many clients would come, participants, people, just as many individuals could come, and this is why the director of the program would need to be the same number of hours. Would have just as many individuals showing up. They would just be there fewer hours.
Correct.
With the exception that it's possible justices or judges would say, now, this isn't enough supervision, so I'm going to send this person to jail. That would be the way you might have fewer people in the program.
And that's a possibility. And, I'm not a judge, and I don't know how they would view that.
Okay. Can I ask on the core probation, you've got a drop in state aid from 17.5% to 15% this year?
Yes.
Is that right? What's the history of it? Some time ago it was even quite a bit higher than that. Do you happen to know?
I think I had mentioned when I started at probation 22 years ago, it was 46.5%.
46.5% of core probation was funded by New York State?
State Aid.
Mm-hmm. 20 years ago.
20 years ago. And every year it's gone down, 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 down. I mean, I have a perfect graph that shows that.
Oh, so there's a mystery about our property taxes. Caseloads, can you track? I mean, you probably, I don't know if you know it off the top of your head. You mentioned you don't want to have a probation officer supervising 150 people. Do you know how many are assigned right now to your...
Yeah, in the criminal court units, they're currently carrying between 60 and 70.
60 to 70, okay.
More like 65 is the average. The American Probation and Parole Association recommends one probation officer per 50 cases. So we're already above the recognized standard, the approved standard. It's not a state standard, but okay. It's what the association recommends.
Okay.
If I had to cut three people out of the rotation, and then there's like 60 times three, 180 cases that would have to be redistributed, with three less people, you know, to do the work, caseloads are probably going to go up to 85, 95 cases per probation officer. That's okay. Too much.
Right. And we've talked a little bit about Leandra's law and changes in the Rockefeller drug laws. Could you tell us what you're seeing as far as the changes in the Rock laws is a little bit, you know, you have almost a year under your belt,
yeah.
And Leandra's is newer. What are you seeing as results?
Okay, so I am tracking those cases that have fallen under the Rockefeller drug laws. These are cases that previously, you know, would have been incarcerated in the state prison level. So I believe across the department we've seen 8 cases that normally we would not have received under the old law. You know, Judge Rowley just gave a presentation to CJATI Monday about what he's seeing. You know, he has 10 judicial diversion cases in the wings that could possibly be coming probation's way. It's slowly building. So I anticipate that'll be a continuing stress factor on the department as well. Leandra's law just went into effect August 15th, so we're in it now. You know, the law requires the probation department to ensure that the interlock is installed within 10 business days of the sentence, so probation officers are having to get people in and on the phone to the vendor and getting things set up. So that's just more additional work. I mean, we always had time before to work on the driver's license issue because we didn't recommend the interlock until they actually got the driver's license back. But this law says regardless of whether your license is revoked or not, you have to get the interlock installed on a vehicle whether you can drive or not. So it's just a different mandate.
Okay. And I just want to point out that my understanding of, and maybe this was last year's budget, when they first made the changes in the Rockefeller laws, the idea was that the state would pitch in some extra money for counties that didn't really have the kinds of programs we have. So I don't know whether they actually did, but since we already had the programs, we weren't going to get, even in the better year, going to get the extra
actually,
money.
Actually, they were going to pitch in some money for the counties who had bigger numbers of cases qualifying for the judicial diversion. Tompkins County is a small county.
Okay.
We don't have the number of cases that meet that qualification, so we're not expecting to see any money.
But in general, this is the kinds of programs we have represent the model that the state is trying to get every county to go towards. Is that right?
Well, you know, I mean, having this continuum of graduated sanctions is evidence-based practice. We do evidence-based practice here. That's my commitment to the department, that we do good evidence-based practice, that we do what we can to reduce recidivism. So, yes. Thank
you, Pat. Pat, how are we doing on the revenue side? things like collection of restitution. How are we doing? Are we collecting the fees that we're entitled to? Are we implementing fees where we can? For example, I'm thinking of the probation reports for private placement adoptions. Some counties charge to do those. We didn't used to do that. Are we doing that now?
No, we don't charge fees for adoption investigations.
Wouldn't that be a source of revenue we could look at?
It could be a source of revenue. We don't do that many adoption investigations, so I don't think it would be a huge revenue source for us. In terms of restitution collection, we only keep a 5% surcharge of anything we collect. So, of course, that's important, but, I mean, more importantly is that victims are being satisfied. So, we do fairly well at that. Could we do better? You bet we could. In terms of other revenue sources, we are allowed to collect DWI supervision fees for our DWI offender. That's the only category of offense that we're allowed to collect on. Staff is being pushed to make sure that those fee collections are up to date and people stay current with their fees. I think those are the revenue sources that we have. That's pretty much it.
So would the caseloads up? Or would they be those, if you had a chart, would they be going up to the collections?
Hopefully.
If you don't know, it's all right.
Yeah. I would have to do a graph.
Okay.
You know, the restitution order, goes up and down from year to year, how much is ordered by the courts and then how much is collected. So I would have to do a comparison.
I have Julie next. I have you, Peter.
The slide that you put up last answered the question I had.
Good.
I was looking at page 205, the professional services,
yes.
Way down. I wondered why you've given us the answer. And
yes.
That's the bad news, that it affects so many other entities.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Oh. Yeah, just to...
No, it's Carol.
Oh, sorry.
My question isn't really for Pat. It's either for Liz, is it Liz back there, or maybe for our county administrator or chair of the legislature,
I don't, think Liz is going to answer questions about probation. Please direct your question to John.
I was going to raise this in between departments, but Peter raised it now, so I will ask. I think that the article in the Ithaca Journal this morning was quite damning of the county if you don't know how the taxes work. And I actually followed the link or followed the information and looked up the original study from the Tax Institute or whoever it was. And you had to dig pretty deep I don't think it was the Ithaca Journal's fault. It was the release from the study didn't make clear that they weren't just talking about county taxes. They were talking about county plus city plus or whatever municipality plus school.
Mr. Chairman, we're here to talk about probation. Could we get back on the topic?
Carol, I really think Joe cleared that up with his statement.
Well, we can clear it up for us, but it was a big headline in the front of the Ithaca Journal.
He was talking to the same microphone and it's going out to the public.
My question is whether we could do more than that to ask for an article with a similar sized headline to talk about what that meant and where the tax percentages come from. And I'll move if the people on the floor are open to that, that we formally ask our administrator or the chair of our legislature committee to
please don't do that
clear
because
that
I would
up.
Rule it out of order.
Then we'd have to challenge the ruling of the chair.
Yeah. Okay, can I ask Joe then? Will you please clear that up, as you did here, for the public?
We could certainly do an op-ed. I don't know that we could ask the Ithaca Journal to write an article of any size, but we could certainly offer an op-ed piece that explains it.
Thank you.
Peter.
I just wanted to respond to something Martha brought up about four, five, six, seven questions ago. At this, having to do with is it necessarily true that if you shut down day reporting, that that means people will go to jail? And at the CJATI meeting where I learned about all of this and heard Pat describe the presentation she was going to make, Judge Rowley was, as she said, in attendance at that meeting, and he reminded us that it's the judges that makes that decision, and so there's no way of predicting it, but a judge could decide that this program no longer serves the function that it's supposed to serve, and therefore everybody goes to jail that comes, that they simply won't assign people, so that there is that risk that if we cut it down to half, it may come back to bite us.
Anyone else questions on probation? Hearing none.
Can I have just
you
a
have
few
questions?
Yeah, I just have a few.
Okay.
Not a question, but just a few final remarks.
not a question.
It's okay.
One about the day report. I mean, just one general comment about day reporting. I mean, I really think, you know, this legislature needs to maybe, you know, make a value judgment about what is more important. People languishing in jail who don't necessarily need to be there, or people who could be in a productive day program, getting services, getting GED help, and getting employment help to make them more productive. I don't think there's any no productivity in the jail. Okay. My other remark is just that I mentioned before the cross-departmental impact, and just for the legislature to be aware that the probation department could be affected by some cuts that may be made to some other departments. Specifically, the DSS budget, there's an OTR out for the Dispositional Alternatives Program. That's a program that's used quite frequently by probation. It's a service that is designed to keep youth who are at risk of foster care in the home. And, you know, when talking this over with my family court supervisor, she was pretty devastated at considering that this loss may occur, and she was pretty clear that, you know, if the service isn't available to help kids stay in the home, then there's probably going to be a lot more recommendations for placement outside the home. That's a significant cost to the county. It's not a good thing for the child. It's not a good thing for the family. The other one for DSS is the loss of the therapeutic day treatment program at the William George Agency. Again, this is a big referral source for probation officers. Again, they provide respite care, counseling to in-need families. The loss of that, it's expected that there would be an increase in our JD numbers and more recommendations for foster care as a result of that loss. The other big cut that the Youth Services Department is facing is the funding that was going to be designated for the rural at-risk youth. Wow. You know, if there's not positive, productive after-school programming for these at-risk youth, we're going to be seeing them at probation. There's going to be PINS referrals. There's going to be more JD intakes because they're out committing crimes. Idle time is going to lead to negative behavior. So I just want you to know that those losses most likely are going to impact us in some way. So I just wanted to say that.
Frank, and then Martha.
You just precipitated another question. And in a little defense of the sheriff's office, a number of years ago, I'm going to pull up Peter. A number of years ago, Dick Booth and I, when we were both on public safety, had asked a similar question of Kathy Lenthal. How would we find out how individuals that were about to participate in probation or were getting probation services, how would we find out how many of our agency services they were availing themselves of? At the time, we were touching about 180, 190 different agencies in this county. Remember the yellow book that the coalition used to put out? Now it's all online. And we never were able to get a definitive answer because there was no, well, at the time, everybody was looking into it, but we never got clarity on it. And I know a lot of those services access the jail and are able to provide services through the jail for agency support. How would we find out now? Is there any cross-reference with individuals that are on probation or receiving probation services? How would we find out if they're accessing any of our agency services? Is there some way to do that?
Well, I don't have like a list per se, but I know how many of my probationers, I mean, I know where we refer for services. I mean, I don't have a running list of how many go where. Are you talking about in the community or are you talking about while in the jail?
If an individual who is on probation, day reporting, whatever it happens to be, is taking advantage of one of the myriad of agency services that we support and that this board happens to support in some way, regardless of if they're in danger for 2011 or not, how would we find out if by number, not by name, obviously, because I think that might be confidential, but how many are taking advantage of the advocacy center or whatever it happens to be? We have a whole myriad of them. And with all due respect to Peter Meskel, I know that when we were on public safety, there was a question of that very same question was posed those many years ago, and we were never given the information, and it's a little bit of a shame because we do support a lot of services for the very cadre of individuals that you're mentioning, but you say there is a way to determine that?
Well, you know, we don't have a log or a list every time we make a referral. I think that would require a survey
well,
of
it would
our probation
also,
officers and where their clients are accessing services.
I think it would also help some of us, though, and this is nothing I'm asking you to do, but this would help some of us help defend some of the agencies that are having a rough time right now in order to help retain some of their funding. If they could point to how many times someone takes advantage of their service, and some of those very people are people that go through the courts or whatever it happens to be. Anyway.
Okay.
Let me make a comment, Frank, about that, since everyone else is doing it.
Just a question?
We just had 35 agencies come here the other evening, and many of the agencies are, you know, mixed with other places and other things that the county does, and a lot of those kinds of things that you were just talking about, those agencies deal with those people. And I don't think, you know, I'm not going to go out on a limb and say they're keeping track of people who've been through the criminal justice system. But I think by the very name of the agency, you can almost figure out that you're going to have some people who've been through the justice system at some point, at least to me. Someone had their hand up, Martha.
Yeah, Frank, I think it would violate a lot of privacy standards for Catholic Charities to ask anybody if they're on probation before they give them, you know, a food allowance or, you know, clothing or shelter allowance, whatever. I mean, I think the idea of making sure referrals are as appropriate are made and followed up, that's important, but, you know, it's not sure where you're going with that. I just want to say I appreciate, this is to Joe really, is that I appreciate that the full 208,000 OTR here, you know, you were faced with a big chunk and you've managed to squeeze 109,000 into your 5% budget so that we're looking at a smaller chunk. In terms of if we choose to restore the full amount. So I just want to say I appreciate that you did that. Thank you.
Any other questions for Patricia? Thank you. I just want to make one comment. I think as elected officials, if we have differences with what we read in the newspaper or hear on the radio, then we have a responsibility to either write a letter or make a comment to somebody. I do not think it's the county administrator's position to be writing op-ed pieces about whatever happens to be written in the Ithaca Journal. If we want to do one as a legislator or a legislature, yeah, I think we're free to do that. But otherwise, I don't want them to spend time writing op-ed pieces about articles in the newspaper. Martha.
Dooley has a draft that's going to one of the newsletters, and then we talked about working on it for the journal. So we will we'll take off on that.
Okay. We're going to go on a break right now for about 8 or 9 minutes. Go ahead.